This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode 111. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. This is Darren Miller joining you today from Omaha, Nebraska, and I am joined by an outstanding wildlife and nature photographer, Alan Shattuck, and he's going to talk to us today about his amazing work that I've seen that really made me want to interview him today and the different system that he's shooting. Most of the photographers that we have on the show here shoot both Canon, Nikon, and other camera brands, but I think they're a little bit unrepresented. What do you personally shoot, Alan?
Well, I am shooting a Sony system.
Very cool. How did you come along shooting the Sony system?
Well, it really started a long time ago. My interest in photography, you know, developed at an early age. But my first introduction to that particular lens mount was in the mid '80s. Minolta came out with the first consumer autofocus SLR. And which was quite a, I remember like yesterday, the first time I picked that camera up, it must have been 84, 85. It was a Minolta 7000, Minolta Maxim 7000, 35 millimeter. Had the autofocus, had a single spot in the center. Had, if you can imagine, never seeing autofocus before. It was all manual focus with the SLR as part of that. Anyway, that was my first... That was the first intro into the Minolta system, which that particular lens mount has just carried on through Sony, you know, through there was an acquisition of Konica Minolta, which then Sony acquired, and along with that lens mount. So it was just a natural transition. I stayed with them, you know, at the time Sony bought it, they had come out with the first, you know, the in-body stabilization also, which suddenly made all my Minolta lenses stabilized. So that was something that got me to stick with them too. But that's the kind of the transition. And then through the years, of course, there's been a lot of changes. The technology's improved. Bodies have improved, and I've pretty much sold off my Minolta lenses over the years, and settled with a few high-end Sony and Zeiss lenses at this time.
Very cool. So mainly, so when you were shopping, and since you were loyal to the Minolta brand, and you just followed the progression of Sony buying them out, so it wasn't really a decision of having to compare Canon, Nikon, and anything else like that. It was just a progression of being happy with what you had and kind of going along with the saying, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Is that correct?
Yeah, pretty much. And I have, you know, there have been several points when I've, you know, decided to make a major upgrade, and I've really weighed all my options, and I've looked at the alternatives, and really just couldn't see making the change. For one thing, it'd be an expensive change, and I just couldn't see the image quality is really the bottom line for me, and I couldn't see the expense of making a switch helping me image quality wise. So I've been happy to stay where I'm at, and I do really enjoy what Sony has to offer.
Yeah, it's very cool, because also one thing that stands out is the quality of your work. If you actually head over to your website, which I'm going to have you mention here in a moment, you can just see the crispness of the focus, and honestly the way that you take focus to an extreme. I mean, looking at almost every single shot on there, the focus is where it needs to be, and it's just it's such a clear shot, and it tells the story of wildlife photography and the way I want wildlife photography to look. So where can your images be found? Because I want people, if you're not driving your car and you're not at the gym working out, I want people to be able to log on their computers and pull up your website right now. So where can they find you?
Well, it's at shaddockphotography.com. That's S-H-A-D-D-U-C-K photography.com. And also I've got a Facebook page, you know, facebook.com/shaddockphotography. We'll also link you back there too. But
Right. And I can also put that in the show notes as well for everyone as well, in case you happen to be running or on your way to work. We don't want you to pull over to write that down. So just head over to improvephotography.com episode or improvephotography.com/111, and you'll be able to find Alan's work in the show notes. So diving into the Sony gear, what particular camera are you shooting? Because a lot of people don't talk about this, but Sony has a mirrored system and they have a mirrorless system. And right now what's really hot is the mirrorless system. So what exactly are you shooting, Alan?
I'm shooting the SLT system, which is a translucent mirror. It's the traditional AMEL. I guess it's not really traditional, but for Sony it is. They did away with the moving mirror when they introduced the translucent mirror several years back.
So the mirror is fixed for those who are DSLR shooters. That just to clarify that, the mirror does not move at all, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It's got, you know, it introduces some advantages and disadvantages. I mean, it gives you, with the translucent mirror, the one big disadvantage is that it costs some light. I mean, the translucent mirror reflects part of the light up to the PDAF autofocus sensors, and that costs, I've seen numbers anywhere from 24% to 28% of the light is used for that. So you lose, you know, a percentage of a stop. So that's the big sacrifice, but you gain the full-time live view, full-time, what you see is what you get, which is an incredible thing when you're shooting manual, to be able to just dial in, you know, your preferred aperture and shutter speeds and ISOs and really have a really good idea of what that looks like without going to the review afterwards. You can see before you snap the shutter, live histogram, along with that, and then high resolution electronic viewfinder. It's, my gosh, it's like looking at an IMAX screen in HD when you put your eye up to the viewfinder, and which is a turn off to some people that don't want to get away from that optical viewfinder, but I find it incredible. Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, honestly, you get to see the image unfold in front of your eyes, so I'm guessing it's somewhat similar. I went out and bought the Sony A6000 a couple months ago, and you can see the histogram in there, and the image unfolds right in front of your eyes, so there's no guessing. It's not spray and pray. It's actually making a cold, calculated image right there.
Right, that's correct. I've got an A6000 as well that I just picked up, and it's the only E-mount camera that I have from Sony, and I believe that is the same exact electronic viewfinder that is in the A99 and the A77 Mark II.
Well, so what are your thoughts on the A6000? I have some mixed reviews as far as keeping up with wildlife and high action photography. And when you go over to shattuckphotography.com, you can see a lot of those shots are animals in action. So do you think the A6000 could keep up?
Well, I haven't had time to play with it a lot, but just the focus system in general, I think it's going to be better with the SLTs, with that full-time phase detection system going on along with the direct off the sensor. The newest, fastest, best autofocus system that Sony's put out is in this A77 Mark II that they just released. I think it's like 6 months or so ago, and the mirrorless, that's one area where I think the mirrorless hasn't caught up yet, but probably only a matter of time.
Well, it's good and refreshing to hear that from a Sony shooter, because I've been shooting it for a while and I'm loving the camera. I'm loving the pros that we're seeing in there that you mentioned, like being able to see the image unfold in front of you and making a cold, calculated capture versus spray and pray. But in the same token, it does have its drawbacks, and I think that it will grow eventually. But the mirrored systems, they do seem to, you know, they take home the prize when it comes to autofocus and fast autofocus. So you mentioned the A77 Mark II and the A99. So what are the applications of both of those cameras in your workflow?
The A99 is a full frame.
Okay.
And so, I mean, it's really my main, it's my main camera. I mean, everything for me, you know, landscapes, portraiture, it's going to be my main go-to camera. The 77 Mark II, it's got the new improved autofocus system, which is great for the moving wildlife you're talking about. And plus, it's an APS-C sensor, so getting that extra reach on my 400 millimeter lens, it's basically my wildlife telephoto body. But they're both very capable, and they've, you know, they both have that SLT translucent mirror, so they've got the advanced autofocus capabilities that makes me not quite ready to consider going to the mirrorless yet until and unless they develop that on out. But
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, using the full frame system for one application and then using the crop sensor system for another application is key, because I remember, you know, almost a year ago, I was asking Jim on the show. I was saying, hey, Jim, I need to go out and buy a 1DX or a 5D Mark III to replace my 6D. And he said, well, why don't you look at an APS-C sensor? And I kind of just pushed that advice off to the side for a little bit, to be quite honest. But I was out shooting bald eagles by the river, and I had my Canon 6D with a 100 to 400 millimeter lens on there. And this guy with a 1DX and a 5D Mark III with two huge 400 millimeter f/2.8 lenses was out there with two times teleconverters. And he says, you know what? You should throw that on a crop sensor, give you that magnification. And that's really what I think you're talking about there, is that when it comes down to it, crop sensors, they're different. They're not necessarily better or worse than full frame. They just have a different application.
Right. I, you know, have to recognize when I use the crop sensor, I'm losing a little ISO sensitivity. I'm losing a little dynamic range, but the trade-off is 50% more reach, so.
Yes, it is. So what kind of glass are you using? I know you mentioned earlier that you're using some of the Sony and the Zeiss glass. Are you using any proprietary glass that's just made for the Sony mount? Or what's your go-to lens that you find yourself using the most?
Well, it's hard to really say one. I've really narrowed it down to four over the years. Like I said, I've just kind of evolved and upgraded my glass to the Sony G and the Zeiss lenses. For the full frame, I'll use the Zeiss 16-35 2.8 for probably 80-90% of my landscapes. And I've also got the Zeiss 24-70 2.8, which sometimes for landscapes, if I'm shooting, you know, people pictures, I dabble in portraiture. And that would be my go-to lens for portraiture, the 24-70. Yeah,
that sounds like a workhorse lens, especially if you're using it for the most of your work. But I really want to get on and start talking about, you know, a little bit more of your landscape photography and what you do with your workflow. But before we move on, I would like to take a moment to thank Harry's for making this episode of the Improved Photography Podcast possible. All right, let's face it, shaving can be a pain. It can be uncomfortable, cause razor burn, nicks, and on top of that, it can be outrageously expensive. Harry's solves that problem. They're about half the price than the big branded razor blades, and they ship for free right to your front door. All you need is a fuzzy pair of slippers, and you just need to walk to your front door and grab your razors right then and there. No need to get ready to go to the store and get showered up and all that other stuff. They're right shipped to your front door. But guess what? They're better razor blades as well. The first blades were made in Germany, and they liked them so much that Harry's bought the entire factory right then and there. Why should someone have to pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades? It's half the price at Harry's, and with Harry's, you get a better shave that respects your skin, face, legs, and wallet. No more poor quality blades, and no more pesky plexiglass cabinets to be unlocked either behind the pharmacy counter. The starter kit is already an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, and 3 razor blades. And with promo code IMPROVE, you get an even better deal with $5 off that already amazing deal with your first purchase. Men, women, we all need better razors that shave and don't suck. Go to harrys.com now, and Harry's will give you $5 off that first purchase if you type in coupon code IMPROVE, and that's for your first purchase. That is Harry's, HARRYS.com, and enter coupon code IMPROVE at checkout to get $5 off your first purchase and start shaving better today. All right, Alan. So what I want to do is discuss, you know, how you're capturing such detailed shots of animals that are either dangerous to shoot, like I've seen pictures of bears on your website, all the way to skittish animals like birds, wild cats. Thinking of the photo of, was it a lynx you said prior to the recording, or a bobcat?
The bobcat. That was a bobcat out. In fact, it's the only one I've ever seen in the wild in my life. I grew up in Kansas, and Kansas and Nebraska. This was out in Colorado in Rocky Mountain National Park. And just stumbled onto him. I was had gone out you know, an hour before sunrise to shoot sunrise out in the mountains. And I was heading back into the hotel and getting close to the Beaver Meadows entrance, leaving the park there. And he just walked across the road in front of me, and I pulled over and had a fleeting few moments to get out the 400 millimeter. And I use a beanbag support on my van. I usually travel in a full size van when we're out doing that kind of stuff. And, I threw my beanbag over the window and I had about a minute and a half with him before he disappeared into the brush.
Hey, that sounds like some MacGyver stuff. That's really awesome. So when you get close to these animals, like I just mentioned bears a little bit previously to that, how are you getting those close shots? Are you cropping in? Are you using the reach of your lens? Are you patient? Are you getting close to where, you know, it's kind of within danger, or how are you getting those shots? Because I don't want photographers to put themselves in danger in any way, shape, or form, but it looks like you've been doing this a while and you know how to get your subjects in the best possible light and then without having to, you know, get extremely close and possibly get attacked or chased by a bear or a moose.
Yeah, well, all of that's really key. I mean, it's a combination of things, and most of those bear images came out of Yellowstone National Park, which is one of my favorite places in the world, especially for that kind of photography. And it's a lot of it is it takes time. I mean, hunting and waiting. I grew up in a family of hunters and fishermen, and it's really being in the right place at the right time. And a lot of that is waiting and kind of following, knowing where the, you know, learning where the animals are going to be and the likes of the lighting. Safety, when it comes to bears, I mean, there are federal laws in the national parks that you can't be within 100 yards. And I'll tell you, I probably was closer than 100 yards in a few of those shots you saw, but I was definitely behind the safety of my, you know, inside my van with that beanbag support at those times.
That's refreshing to know that, you know, that we don't have Allen meat to offer anytime soon.
Right.
So beyond doing that, it seems like you just have, you know, the patience of a saint. And I think that when it comes to looking at a lot of landscape and wildlife photographers, especially wildlife photographers, you just have to be patient. So have you spent hours out there just waiting for the right animal? Like, do you go out on a mission and say, I'm going to get a picture of an elk today and just wait until it happens? Or what's your process when you're out looking for these? I mean, a lot of people are probably within driving distance of a national park within our listenership. So what's your process?
Well, a lot of it, like I said, it's timing, and some of that timing is even the time of the year. When we do the Yellowstone trips, I think my favorite time of the year for the bears is when they're fresh out of hibernation. They're hungry, they're out looking for stuff, early June, the elk start calving, and that's a prime supply of grizzly breakfast. And so being there at the right time of the year and then you know, kind of getting them to know the lay of the land and know where the animals are at and is really key. And then a lot of it is waiting, being at the prime location and where you know there's been activity, and you can wait for hours sometimes, and, you know, and it doesn't always come through.
It's probably like hunting in a lot of respects, like sure. You said, to where you could get skunked very easily, you know, but I guess part of the thrill is to get out there and shoot. But to change gears just a tad bit, I also have to mention that you're an excellent landscape photographer. And one of the shots that really made me notice you and made my father notice you and said, hey, you know, you need to get a hold of this guy, he's very awesome, was the shot that you did of a Nebraska scenery with a storm rolling in. We can see stars in the background. How was that shot created? What was the process behind it? I know you probably get that question a million times, and you probably got that a million times on the Nebraska Photographers Network Facebook page.
Well, it's a lot like the wildlife photography, the right place at the right time and planning. I mean, and sometimes you strike out, but that particular shot, and you got to throw in a dose of luck as well. But to be in a position where the thunderstorm's coming by and there was a partial clearing with the stars. And, I'll rush out many times and not find the right recipe to get what I'm looking for. But that night it just all came together. That was shot north of Hastings. It just all came together. There was a cornfield in the foreground, I believe. I tried to do a little light painting on that in one of them. I'm not sure which, if that's one you're looking at, but I think I did like a 30-second exposure and just let the lightning do its dance and came out pretty amazing. With the wide angle lens, wanted to get those stars. That's why I went the 30 seconds.
Yeah, and they're so crisp as well, too. I mean, usually with a longer exposure like that, you start to see them trail. But, I mean, this, everything came together. Like you said, it was just a recipe, and everything came out. The one I'm looking at has the corn cropped out there, but you can definitely tell it's a longer exposure, especially with that radio antenna out there. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the Midwest, I'd probably say Hastings is probably closer to Lincoln, Nebraska. That's where the Nebraska Cornhuskers are from. Is that correct, Alan?
Hastings is about 100 miles west of Lincoln.
Okay, so it's actually pretty far from Lincoln, see? And Nebraska is a bigger state than most people think. It takes about 8 hours to drive across it from end to end, so most people don't realize that there's a lot to offer within this state, and it's very beautiful, and there's a lot of scenery in there, especially just looking through your gallery. We even have, right now, what's going on is the Sandhill Crane migration that's about to begin, and you do have a ton of photos with that, too, and that's really within your landscapes where you incorporate your wildlife with the landscape shot. It's like looking at one of your shots, at first your eye says, okay, well, the Sandhill Cranes are blurry, but wait, the moon is so sharp in that shot. So what made you decide to have that one be a keeper? Because at first the trained eye is going to notice, yes, that's a great shot for a great reason, because we can see the power and the movement of the bird, and then we can see the clarity of the moon. So is that what made you keep it, or what was your thought process on that one?
Well, the thought process, really, I mean, it was planning and waiting. I mean, I had this desire to get a shot where, you know, the moon was crater clear, where you could see those craters and get those birds coming across the front. But unfortunately, it's hard to talk them into being in the right place at the right time. So it takes some time. Position yourself in an area where they're pretty thick. That particular shot was probably out along the Platte River, where they're, you know, very, very heavily congregated during the migration, so it increases your chances of getting them to line up correctly. And that's what I did. I was a tripod. I'm, you know, manually focused on the moon and constantly adjusting because that moon's moving.
Very cool.
Just waiting for the right moment.
Awesome. All right. And also, prior to recording, we were talking about lenses. And I know that you said you probably didn't, part of the reason you didn't change and go over to a different manufacturer for your camera body was because of your vested interest in glass. And I think that's my stance right now when it comes to Canon and wanting to possibly jump over to Nikon. So looking at different lens options, we did talk about your experience with a Tamron 150 to 600 millimeter lens. And you said you weren't too fond of it for a couple of reasons. So explain, you know, the pros and cons, what you've seen with that, because I know a lot of people based on budget are eyeballing that lens, but when you're talking about this being, you know, your retirement and talking about this being fine art style photography, what did that lens do to not meet your needs?
Yeah, I'm really trying to like it. It's really, on the one hand, it's probably a very good value for the money if that's going to be your only telephoto lens, and you're not, you know, if you're happy with being able to, you know, post stuff on the web. And but when it comes to the quality that I would be wanting to look for to market the images, it's just not quite there for me. And especially to the center. I mean, it'll do. What I'm finding is if you stop it down. A lot of people say f/8, but I'm finding I've got to go f/11 to really get the center near the sharpness of a high-end Sony G or Zeiss lens.
Wow.
And then it rapidly fades in sharpness as you go towards the edges. And it's just not quite meeting what I was hoping it would do. I've got the Sony 70-400G Mark II, which is just an excellent optical quality lens, and I was hoping to extend that out to 600, and the Tamron, it does really a nice job up to about 400 millimeter, but it's that stretching beyond 400 millimeter when it really starts to soften up, and that's where I wanted the extra reach, and that's why it's really not gonna live up to what my expectations were. But on the other hand, I wouldn't advise against it for somebody that wanted to use that, as if that's your main telephoto lens.
Oh yeah, and I think a lot of lenses struggle with that, getting past that 400 millimeter mark. Like the Sigma lens struggles with that as well, in a similar price point and a similar offering. And it's just to mainly get to that, I guess, focal length, I think that we really have to look at our prime lenses. Prime lenses, in my opinion, make us better photographers.
That's right.
Yep. And also, really, to change gears here, you being a Sony shooter is just a unique experience having you on the show. So with your standpoint using the translucent mirror systems, where do you see the market going? Because right now I'm really frustrated with Canon. I hear other podcasts and other people talking about how at consumer electronics shows and et cetera, they say the people at the Olympus booth, the people at the Panasonic and et cetera booth are very receptive to customer needs. They put firmware updates out there for them and make the camera actually better without having them change the body. And to me, I just see Canon and Nikon not being very receptive to that, and they have some dinosaur thinking. So what's your stance on that, including Sony? Where do you see the market being in 5 years if you had to be a betting man? And I guess you're pretty lucky, especially putting all those things together, including those right timing shots with that you have so far.
Yeah, I don't know. There's rumored to be a replacement for this A99 full frame on the horizon, and I don't know, you know, we don't, if that's going to go, if it's going to be translucent, or if they're going to go mirrorless. They're going to have to improve the autofocus capability of the mirrorless if they do that. So I really don't know where it's going. It's going to be interesting to see. I suspect there's going to be the higher end of the Sony line may stay with the A mount with the translucent. I don't know. It's all really a speculation at this point.
Oh yeah.
I think every brand, the folks feel like they're being not being listened to. Mm-hmm. With Sony, I mean, it's like, wow, Sony you sell your 36 megapixel sensors to Nikon, but you don't give us one in the A mount. So there's kind of some hope that this replacement maybe will be the 36 megapixel in the next upgrade. So, I mean, with some improvements, so we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. That is a very solid point. I mean, so yeah, I know that, you know, Nikon probably won't readily admit it, that, but everybody knows that's, you know, all of the sensors in Nikon cameras essentially Sony ones, and I didn't know that frustration and that they didn't offer that to the Sony users. So there are frustrations, like you said. There's benefits and drawbacks to everything, and I think that that's really what the show is all about, is trying to be as realistic as possible about everything.
And they have, you know, in the new E-mount, the Sony E-mount mirrorless cameras, they, in this A7 line, they do have the 36 megapixel sensor there. Mm-hmm. But the E-mount, like I say, the drawback to that right now is the autofocus system, and for me to use my A-mount lenses that I'm heavily invested in would require a $400 adapter.
Oof.
And so I'm very happy staying where I'm at right at the moment, and see, you know, we'll see what the future holds.
Yeah, well, you know what they always say, you date your camera bodies and you marry your lenses. So the lenses, they definitely dictate where we go. So before we end the episode, we always like to ask our guests to come on to mention a doodad of the week. So do you have a doodad of the week, whether it's an app, piece of gear, a lens, something that's just you can't live without that makes your photography that much better?
Well, as far as a doodad, I don't know. I've got a small little thing. It's called it's a double tail boss strap that is just an inexpensive. I think it's $19. If you use a camera that's got a vertical grip, a battery grip, mm-hmm. and if you're one of the folks that uses the Black Rapid R strap or one of those similar sling straps, this boss strap is a small strap with a ring that connects to the left side, and provides a ring to connect that without using your tripod socket. And I don't see a lot of people using, and I just think it's a fantastic little inexpensive gadget.
Yeah, because I use the Black Rapid R strap as well, and I was kind of looking for something like that, and I'm not a battery grip user, so I wonder how that would work without the battery grip, but still, it seems like a great doodad for those that use battery grips. And then my doodad of the week is actually a Tamron lens, and really I think that Tamron does a great job of getting good quality glass out there for the price range. I mean, there definitely are sharper lenses out there, but one that we have personal experience with, my father and I, is the Tamron SP 24-70 DIVC USD, which is pretty much image stabilization. They have it for Canon, Nikon, and Sony mounts, and when we were using it on our Canon 6Ds and our 70D, we just loved it. We came out with such sharp results with portrait photography. Everyone's eyes, as long as we were focusing correctly, were perfectly sharp, and the detail was just phenomenal. I was blown away by it, and it's probably about $400 to $500 less, and it has image stabilization when the Nikon and Canon versions do not. So that's my doodad of the week. But pretty much, I just really wanted to take a moment to also talk about, you know, the Sony A99, the pros and cons for landscape photography, and the A77. Just when do you find yourself pulling out the A77 just for nature photography for the most part?
Yeah, it's a fairly new one. It's the A77 Mark II. I had the A77 earlier on and replaced that with an A99 because the A99 full frame was just so much better with the dynamic range and the higher ISO sensitivity. But this new iteration, the A77 Mark II, it's an improved sensor, and it's a far advanced autofocus system, and so I've incorporated that into my bag. And I've only had it a few months, but basically, yeah, it's my telephoto body.
So were those eagle shots that you have posted recently, were those shot with that A77 Mark II?
Yes, they were.
Okay, I definitely suggest everyone head over to shattuckphotography.com now to check out those eagle shots before we let you go, because I think that is just a highlight of what that camera can do, because I think Sony just kind of gets pushed off the side. Everyone just thinks of their mirrorless system, and they forget they do have a professional line with translucent mirrors, which is the EXT line. Is that correct?
SLT line
of cameras, and I think everyone should always take a hard look at every single option, regardless of whether you love Nikon, you love Canon. If you don't have a bunch of money tied up in glass, take a look at Sony. I've definitely changed my mind about them numerous times after seeing images from Alan and peers of ours locally, and I just sincerely thank you, Alan, for taking the time to sit down and speak a little bit about Sony, and then also discuss your beautiful work and your approach for capturing those images.
Well, thank you, Darren. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, sir. It's been a sheer pleasure, and I can't wait to hopefully cross paths with you in Hastings sometime.
Sounds great.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.